Yo, hey, we are back with another episode of Dialogue Heavy, and yours truly, Michael Anthony McMillan. Wherever you are, wherever you're at, morning, evening, or night, thank you for listening to your boy. As you know, we got to be intentional and deliberate with everything that we want in this life. So I'll tell you two things. One, I want to share these stories with my family, friends, fans, and others. Garner the people out there in the world that can help me get these stories to the rest of the world. So today we are on chapter 2 of Never Have I Ever. In the first chapter, we got a young lady named Mrs. Pointer who is trying to figure some things out. It's the night before her husband and her sons come back from a reprieve out in Los Angeles at a Los Angeles Rams football game camp. And she's trying to figure out why she feels so damn shitty. She had been exercising the demons all week, cooking and cleaning the whole house from top to bottom, and she still feels like crap. Her friends told her and her therapist told her that all is well, it's probably just a midlife crisis, but she knows that deep down inside there's something else going on. So we go to explain about her husband and what he does. He works in interrogation tactics with the United States military, and he takes care of the whole family, everything financially. They live in this humongous house that is surveilled by tons of cameras everywhere, and he's a nice guy, just a bit paranoid. Oh, and also he's a big fan of sports and stuff like that. So we describe the whole house and how beautiful their house is, and we're trying to figure it out. One thing about her is she has a problem with sugar. Maya has a deep love for sugar, as we all do, and her doctor had just told her that she has to quit it, that you got to let it go and stuff like that. You know, maybe it's diabetes, who knows, but she has to let it go. So she's having to deal with that struggle, and whenever she gets nervous or she feels weird, she eats a lot of sugar. Just so happens, the night in question, she's extremely, you know, paranoid and feeling like crap. And there's only one thing in the house that has any sugar in it, and it's this container of double chocolate ice cream in the back of the freezer that her husband asked her not to touch. It's even labeled "Do Not Touch," and it also has the initials UT on there. We're gonna figure out today what that UT means. But she was told not to, but she was like, you know what? I'm a grown ass woman. I'm gonna have this ice cream, have a full belly full of chocolate, take my butt to sleep, and wake up tomorrow morning. And if he gets mad, I'll just buy the stuff that he can make another set again. So that's where we're gonna continue at today. We're gonna hear Gene's side of his story, and we'll go from there. It will definitely be another chapter to this story today. It'll just be the middle chapter. We may end up with it next week, but for now we're gonna go on this side. So without further ado, I bring to you Never Have I Ever, chapter 2. As you know, everything on this podcast is written and recited by me thus far, Michael Anthony McMillan. So here we go, chapter 2, Never Have I Ever. Gene knew that there were things about his wife that he didn't know. There had to be, right? I mean, who was 100% honest all the time? Gene wasn't, and he wasn't perfect either. There were things that he'd hidden from Maya too, but he had already knew about what he'd done in the past. He wanted to know his wife's skeletons. Were they happy? Yeah. Did they have a good life? Yes. Did he need to go prying into matters prehistoric or unimportant in comparisons to the life that they've built? No. But that all changed when a chance conversation with Maya weeks prior sprung up and struck something in Gene's psyche that made him curious about Mrs. Perfect. It was after a long day at the office that Gene had come home through the side door rarely used and caught Maya scourging the kitchen for a late night snack. Poor baby, Gene thought. His wife was forced cold turkey by their family physician to stop her only vice, sugar. He watched through their patio door as she took two swipes of a chocolate ice cream placed in the freezer by him that he had asked Maya and the boys not to touch. So he was surprised to see her, of all the people in the house, hovering over it like a scavenger. But bad habits do die hard. Once Maya had her fix, she cleaned all the evidence and retired upstairs for the night, and Gene took the opportunity to use the random occurrence to his benefit. "Hey, honey," Gene said. "Hi." Maya smiled while applying a lotion on her legs. Gene gave her a kiss and walked over to the closet to take off his clothes. "Hey, did Brian fit those football cleats?" "No," Maya said. "I had to go back and get an 11. "Wow." "Yeah," Maya continued. "Feels like yesterday that he was wearing 3 tees from Oshkosh, and now I'm shopping for him at the men's department. Coach Jay says he's doing great, though. He's going to be a team captain this year." "That's my boy," Gene says. "Maybe you'll be watching him on Saturday soon." "Nope, no maybe," Gene said. "I will be. A full ride to an Ivy League won't hurt either." "Yeah," Maya continued. "If he wants to go to college." "Wait, why wouldn't he want to go to college?" Gene said, flustered. "You never know. He might want to start a business or go into military like his father." "Well, he's not going into the military," Gene said. "And two, he can go to college and learn how to properly open a business." "Sure, if he wants," Maya said. "Why do you keep saying that?" "Look," Maya said, "the world is a big place, Gene. The old way of doing things are old. Don't peg them down to anything." "I'm not pegging, Maya. It's guiding." "Guiding?" Maya said. "My dad said he was guiding me too. Next thing you know, I had a master's degree in theology and I cook and clean for a living now." "Yeah, for your family. And by choice, I might add, Maya." "Who said it was by choice?" Gene looked over at Maya, who was looking out the window towards the dark mountains in the distance. "What?" Gene said. "Nothing." "No, Maya, tell me what you meant. Look, all I know is my parents paid $175,000 for a piece of paper with my name on it. And where is it now?" "It hangs in an office that I don't have." "Wait, what?" Gene said. "You loved college." "I hated college, actually, thank you. And if my parents hadn't threatened to cut me off, I would have done something else with my life." "Like what?" Gene said. "I don't know. Fashion." "Fashion?" "Yeah." "Honey, there's a difference between buying clothes and designing them." "Huh. Yeah. All right, Mr. Know-It-All. I'm talking about as a buyer." "Oh," Gene said and turned to his wife, and there was the tiniest streak of chocolate on her cheek. "And that's why Brian should do what he wants with his life. At the very least, he won't resist if you let him make his own choices. He won't resent you if you let him make his own choices." "Okay. Well, what else did your parents make you do? What, besides go to a private school where the kids make their own caste system? And the staff is so strict that you can get expelled for bringing lipsticks to school?" "Yeah. I don't know. Why?" "Just asking. I've known you for 20 years, Maya, and this is the first time I heard anything like this." Gene looked over at his wife, who shook her head. "I'm tired. I'm going to bed." Maya put her... Sorry, guys. Give me one sec. Maya put her eye covers on and turned off her side lamp. Gene wanted to push more, but he felt if he did, it might make Maya suspicious. In the darkness of their bedroom that night, Gene stared at his wife while she slept. How was it, after all this time, that he didn't know everything there was to know about her? Was the college thing a coincidence? Or was he not paying attention all these years? He'd never noticed the turmoil between Maya and her parents, and the interest of fashion hadn't even been mentioned throughout the entirety of their relationship. So what the hell was going on? And more importantly, what else was there to know about his wife? This would turn into an obsession that haunted Gene until he knew everything there was to know about her. Well, days turned into weeks and nothing new came of their last conversation, and Gene let sleeping dogs lie in order to set the trap of all traps, but it would blow up in his face. Gene had already been working on a secret mission for Guantanamo Bay, a secret project for the army to rid the government of old tactics like flogging and waterboarding. The United States government employed Gene for a covert mission to create the perfect truth serum that can be applied in everyday foods. It could and would, at the very least, be tasteless, but if possible, enhance the flavor of any food, catapult dopamine levels in the brain so future enemies of the state would not only feel fine in their confessions, but be happy to forego information that they would otherwise have held on to until death. Gene tinkered with ingredients, hour after hour, day after day, experimenting with combinations of savory and sweet foods, but after multiple studies, ice cream seemed to be the only source to come to perfect, to come close to perfect. He called it the undisputed truth, his greatest invention. And the night of revelation, he set out a nice bowl of it with whipped cream and nuts in plain sight of their bedroom dresser. He took a shower, and when he returned, like a mouse to cheese, the whole bowl was gone. Gene smiled as he lotioned his body on his side of the bed and thought to himself he would pull all the goodies out of the vault tonight. Mrs. Pointer, Gene called. Yes, Mr. Pointer. I told the boys they can watch the USC game after they clean the pool on Saturday. Can you grab some extra Mountain Dew or juice or whatever when you go to the store? Sure. Thank you. You're very welcome, sir. Gene laughed. Hey, I was just thinking, you remember that kid, Robert, that came over a few weeks ago for the Patriots game? Not really. You know, the tall one, 6'3", about 185 pounds. Vaguely. What? Gene said. You don't remember? He was ripped. He jumped in the pool after the game and the guys were pissed because their wives were drooling all over him. Oh, Maya said. Him, yeah, I remember him. He was weird. Weird? Yeah, Maya said again. He thought he was Top Gun with those stupid aviator glasses. And he tracked water all through my living room. I thought he was cool. Good for you, Maya said. What about him? What about him? He was your type, right? My type? Maya said. You know, tall, six-pack. Maya looked at Gene over her book, eyebrows raised. Come on, Gene said. Don't tell me you weren't right next to the girls gawking at the kid. Shit, I couldn't resist myself. Maya smiled, then pulled back the covers on her side of the bed and hopped in. Are you feeling insecure, Mr. Pointer? No. Are you sure? Me? Hell no. I just saw a good-looking guy and I thought you saw a good-looking guy and I thought, you know, you would tell me if you thought he was cute. Okay, Maya said. I mean, if he's not cute, just say it. It's not like it's a big deal. Is that what you want me to say? Maya said. That the knockoff Tom Cruise is hot? Sure. It's not like that. He's still a dick for not drying off his feet before he pranced in my living room. Ugh, Gene said as he hopped into the bed. He's cute, all right? But he was also a dick. Well, I guess you can call him a cute dick. Maya laughed. But he was cute, right? Gene intervened. Fine, Gene. He was... Mom! Brian screamed from his bedroom and Gene and Maya ran to him. When Gene opened the door, Brian was hunched over in his bed with his back to them. Honey, what's wrong? Maya said. Brian turned over towards his parents, hugging his belly, wrenching in pain. I got a D on my Spanish exam today. What? Both Gene and Maya said. I got a D. I didn't study and I tried to cheat, but it didn't work either. And your stomach hurts because of that? Gene said. I guess. I don't know, Mom, it hurts. Brian had one small streak of chocolate on his chin and Gene realized exactly what had happened. Maya brought some Pepto-Bismol to combat Brian's stomach ache, and after an hour of Brian telling his parents every disgusting thought a young teenager can possess, the family called it a night. Gene laid in his bed terrified at the things his son confessed, but he also realized that with a better setup, it was only a matter of time before he would catch Maya in the fucking act. In his time alone at their home, the morning he and the boys left for Los Angeles, he swept the place for any new hiding places. Maya could or would hide sweets behind the paint cans in the garage, in the maxi pad bag under the sink in the bathroom, any of her 100 designer label bags, but the palace, as far as he was concerned, was clean. Except for what he had placed in the back of the freezer. All he had to do now was set it and forget it. And by time he and the boys returned, she would be primed and ready to tell him every detail of her life that he wanted to know. And boom! Bam, 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 bam. So there you go, guys. That is chapter 2 of Never Have I Ever. We get in Gene's side of the things, and we started to see what Maya had confessed, not confessed, but had told us about in the first chapter of how paranoid he was. I don't know what it could be. It could be, you know, his job or whatever, but it looks from his side of the situation that it was, you know, just having the situation with Maya beforehand. So Maya didn't know that she walked herself into the undisputed truth, the truth serum that was applied to food. I know that's a weird thing. You know where I got undisputed truth from? Undisputed truth is actually the truth serum that Quentin Tarantino, if you notice any of my writing, I write a lot about Quentin. I take a little tidbits here and there from Quentin. And the undisputed truth was the truth serum that he shot into the knee of Beatrix Kiddo, or Black Mamba, in Kill Bill 2, when she finally killed everybody and got to him. And he needed to know what really happened in their relationship. And I like to use tidbits from him and stuff like that, because, you know, it's just like kind of like my honoring him. He's one of my favorite writers. But him and Aaron Sorkin are like creme de la creme in my book when it comes to those type of movies. But anyway, so there you go. You got the second chapter of Never Have I Ever. I'm going to continue this and work on it next week. I did miss last week. I did break my promise of doing something every week. This should have been up last week, but I procrastinated. I did some things I wasn't supposed to do. And the day came up and I just wasn't ready yet. So I'm back on track, and I'm going to continue to try to do this every week. It does get hard and stuff like that, but it is what it is. That, you know, this is my job. This is what I love to do. And I got to, you know, be better in my time management. So there you have it. And we'll continue next week. So I'll talk to you guys later. And thanks again for listening. You know, I love you all. You know how to get a hold of me on my Instagram at Michael DeGrio, my email mzzack199@gmail.com. And that'll do it for this week. So I'll holler at you later. Peace. I'm out of here.